click on one of the links that's on the session page that says ICANN61 San Juan, it gives you the email address that you can email questions into. We have a remote participation manager here with us today. And just to confirm, the email address is ICANN61-202@ICANN.org if you have any questions. Thank you. I'm Samantha Eisner, one of the Deputy General Counsel with ICANN. And today we're here to continue the community discussion on establishing an independent review process for the standing panel for the independent review process. So what we'll cover today, I'll give a welcome and overview of work to develop the standing panel. Liz will weigh in. Liz Lay, who's one of our associate general counsels for ICANN, she's attending remotely and is online. She'll weigh in as necessary on the overview and some of the background of the IRP that we'll go through quickly. I know many people in the room are very familiar with ICANN and the generalities of what we're trying to achieve. And then we'll move more into the specifics. We have Donna Austin and Julie Hammer here today, who both were participants in a community webinar that we had about a month ago on the standing panel. And I also have a statement to read from Alan Greenberg, who also wanted to give his inputs into the conversation today but was not able to join us. And then we'll turn to a group discussion to try to focus on some next steps. First, if you haven't had a chance, I encourage you to look at the meeting page for this session. We have some relevant links. It includes the transcript to the webinar that was hosted, as well as some documents that were circulated earlier to the community. This presentation is also up there, as well as a document that we'll probably turn to for some conversation. So the purpose of the session is to continue our focus on efforts to get the standing panel into place. The standing panel work includes cross-community efforts that are a little bit different and we think pose some challenges different from some of the other work that happens in the community to select people, for example, to review teams, et cetera, because there's a requirement in the ICANN bylaws that the community must come together and agree on a 7-member slate to nominate. And so it's not like the review processes where each SONAC that would participate in the specific reviews, for example, has the opportunity to identify through a nomination process up to 3. This is the community coming together and saying, here are 7 that meet a whole range of diversity requirements and qualification requirements. So we need to continue working on this. We need to identify next steps. And we also, one of the things we're trying to do is to gain an understanding of the full timeline that we need to allow for the community work on this to proceed before we send out the call for expressions of interest. We anticipate that will be a key part of the process in order to get to identify interested panelists. And we want to make sure that we can do a really good estimate for them of how long the whole process will take from the time that they apply to selection, as well as some information as to the how much of their information will be shared and with whom across the process. So the overarching concern is that we need to build a process that gives the ICANN community sufficient information to nominate a standing panel, balancing the concerns of independence, conflicts of interest, and efficiency. And so at the webinar, one of the overarching concerns that we heard was that there might not be sufficient competency across the community to make the panel recommendations. This is a really important part of ICANN's accountability. We're looking at, you know, bringing in very competent, skilled panelists who can serve as that standing panel to create a body of IRP jurisprudence. The IRPs under the new bylaws are binding on ICANN. They create precedent. And so while there will be a very large obligation on ICANN to help train the panel, we want to make sure that as a community, we're bringing in the best panelists. It's really to the benefit of everyone in the system to have a high level of competency and respect among the people that will ultimately be seated on that panel For those of you who aren't familiar, the standing panel will be the group of people from which three panelists will be selected to hear any IRP. So some of the questions that we posed before the webinar, during the webinar, and I think the questions still stand, are listed here. What does your SORAC need to do? Who do you need to empower to help answer the questions in here? How will you work with others across ICANN to reach agreement on the process? How will you work with others across ICANN to reach agreement on a panel? And what can we do from the ICANN org side to help support this effort? So I'm going to run through a couple slides really quickly just to give a little bit of baseline for those of you who aren't familiar with the IRP and for the benefit of those who might listen to the recording later. The IRP is an accountability mechanism provided by Article 4, Section 4.3 of the bylaws that allows for independent review of ICANN board or staff actions alleged by a claimant to be inconsistent with ICANN's articles of incorporation or bylaws. And so proceedings will be presided over by an IRP panel, three members selected by the standing panel or selected from the standing panel. And IRPs are intended to be a final binding arbitration process. The improvements to the IRP were one of the key provisions of the Enhancing ICANN Accountability process that went alongside the IANA stewardship transition work. And the standing panel was identified through that the CCWG and emphasized in the bylaws as a really key component to making sure that ICANN remains accountable to the community. And so we've been working, and I'll just give a little nod to David McCauley, who's here today. David McCauley has been the rapporteur in the CCWG on enhancing ICANN accountability. He's been leading the team that has been developing the updated supplemental rules for the IRP. The IRP requires us to give some special rules to the arbitration provider that helps administer the IRP, because it's not, there are specific rules that need to align to ICANN's bylaws and to the needs of the ICANN community. And so these have been out for public comment. The IOT is working diligently to try to get another version out. We'll hopefully have some resolution on many of them fairly soon. And the IOT has also offered to help coordinate with the community on some of this work to get a standing panel in place. So here, there's a four-step process laid out in the bylaws for how the selection of the standing panel is anticipated to go. The first step is for the selection of an IRP provider. We've agreed that we don't actually need to do that because we have an IRP provider in place. So we went to the next part, which is we need to develop a call for expressions of interest. We need to have community input on how to get to our standing panel. We have some diagrams listed on the session page from today. You can go through and click those links. You'll see a lot of the information of the process flow that we anticipate. And then we developed some questions to start spurring some community conversation. And these on the slides, and I'm not going to run through them really specifically. We can turn back to them at any point in the conversation if you choose. On some of the hallmarks of where we think having some community input around this would be really helpful. So we want to understand how can the community help us attract qualified candidates? Once we get to the point that we have candidates, what can we do to help develop this process in a way that we have some handshake agreement on what it means to be a highly qualified candidate before we even go into that initial review period, so it streamlines ICANN's process in giving the range of people that are identified as highly qualified to the community, who then would take that range of people back and identify the nominated slate.
Sam, can I just ask a question?
Sure, Donna.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Donna Austin, you said that there's already an IRP provider in place. Could you explain a little bit about that? place, who that is?
Sure. So after that independent review process was put in place, after a different ICANN reform effort, the International Center for Dispute Resolution, which is the international arm of the American Arbitration Association, and after an RFP process, they were identified as the IRP provider. And so they have been serving in this role. The IRP provider actually serves almost in an administrator role, so they help coordinate with the panel. There's a lot of administrative support that's needed to support a three-party panel in arbitration proceedings, so they help confirm filings and make sure that the panelists have the information that they need. You actually coordinate payment of panelist fees through the provider. So they do more than just administrative work. They have a largely administrative component. And one of the things that we discovered during the initial tranche of trying to find an IRP provider, and this was before my time, but I've talked to many people who are part of that, is that it was actually very difficult to find an IRP provider who was willing to abide by supplementary rules, to do things that differed from their standard arbitration rules. And so the ICDR was unique in that, and we've had a long relationship with them because of that. So because of those unique challenges and wanting to not extend out the full implementation of the IRP, after conversations with the CCWG as well as the IOT, we reached an agreement that it made sense to proceed at this point with the IRP provider that we currently have contracted. So turning back, then we have issues on the nomination of slate, how will the community come together? And again, I encourage you to look at the more fulsome questionnaire that's on the that's linked from the meeting page. And then what's supposed to happen in this process is the community comes together with a slate. They provide it to the board. There's a presumption that the board will approve the slate as provided by the community, barring some concerns that are specified in the bylaws. And so if those concerns are raised, what type of coordination would happen among the community group that was participating or across the community that was participating in the nomination of the slate? Hopefully this would be one of those situations that wouldn't happen because of the planning that went into the earlier phases, but just in case we wound up in it, it seemed like something that we should plan a bit for in advance instead of trying to address it on the fly later. And so turning past that, what we heard at the webinar, there was a lot of concern about the community's ability to actually have the qualifications in order to assess the level of panel provider that would be needed to make sure that we were looking at it from a proper way of meeting the needs of a full-fledged arbitral panel and not just focusing on the community effort, but really looking at who the panelists were, what they brought, and how to see it in a cross-community way. So there were some ideas that were raised during that I think are probably some of the places that we might want to focus some of the future community conversation. There are ideas of recruiting firms or experts to help make recommendations. So the use of an external firm in order to help vet applicants. Or I've also heard some suggestions of the use of maybe high-level respected jurists to help collect or review the applicants who come in through the expressions of interest process and weigh it against all the documented qualifications that have been provided for the IRP panels. There are also questions of maybe this is something we want to look at as a nominating committee-like entity, because while we have the challenge today of identifying the first panel, panelists may only serve for a certain portion of time. And so this is actually going to be a process that's going to have to replicate over and over. Hopefully we'll never be in the position of having to find seven at the same time again. as we've had some conversations within the IoT on the need to stagger terms across the initial identification of panelists so that we can have some continuity of service even as terms change. And so we need to consider, are we doing something that's for the long term? How can we best operationalize this, and how can we identify the process that the community will support and will support the community in coming up with these, with the mechanism to identify the best candidates? And then and another idea was that we needed to start the conversation on qualifications, including the identification of primary, secondary, and disqualifying characteristics. And so that's one of the documents that we'll turn to shortly. And so one of the additional questions that I wanted to pose is that because of the ongoing nature of the panel work, do we want to look at this first selection process as the initial selection process, and then do we want to meet again to figure out how to handle future selections that will happen on a rotating basis, or do we want to try to solve the issue altogether and identify what the process will be for this year, for 3 years in the future when we have the next tranche of needing to identify people, et cetera. So with that, is this a good time to turn to you? So first we'll turn to Julie Hammer.
Thanks, Sam. I'm Julie Hammer from the ESSAC, but I'd like to stress that while I'm vice chair of ESSAC, I'm very much speaking in my own capacity as an individual with a view on this. And my views come from observing the work that David McCauley has led from a distance as a member of the CCWG accountability, and reading the reports as they've been developed, and also thinking about the questions that have been posed to us by the team and by Sam, and having some personal views on that. And I think that from my perspective, the main issue that it's important for the community to focus on in the first instance is the selection criteria for the panel members. And they've been referred to on a previous slide as qualifications. I think they're qualifications, characteristics, selection criteria. I think what ICANN community needs to come to an agreement on is what are the essential skills and experience that we need in every panel member? What are the desirable skills and experience that we wish to have in panel members? What are the essential skills and experience that might exist in some panel members but that we must have there in aggregate but not necessarily in all panel members? And what are the desirable ones that we would like to have in aggregate but we could do without if we really had to? So it's almost like a matrix of essential, desirable, what must we have individually, and what do we need in aggregate of all seven panel members to allow us to pull together a panel of three specific jurors to supervise any one particular claim. And of course, the disqualifying criteria are also quite important. And I think those things have to be agreed up front before any sort of recruitment process can go ahead. And I think this is where the community can come in and make sure that the aspects of skills and experience important to their particular SO and AC are covered. And so the ESSAC might come in and say, well, we realise that it's not going to be possible for every individual panel member to have some technical understanding in their background, but it would be very desirable for at least one or two to have some, and maybe essential for one, desirable for two or three, something like that. I'm really speculating. So as I see it, that skills and experience matrix, both for individual panel members and for the panel in aggregate, is important to agree up front. Once that happens, then that makes the process of seeking out appropriate people to apply and assisting ICANN or whatever the recruitment mechanism is to facilitate people applying and becoming interested, makes it that much easier. It also makes easier the evaluation process. And I personally think that to have representatives from right across the community involved in the interviewing, the assessment and interviewing stage of the process is not necessary. If we have made that specification up front very thorough and very clear, then what we should be able to do is leave it to either ICANN.org or to an independent specialist recruitment agency or to a combination of both, because let's face it, ICANN.org does have skills in this regard. And so it might be ICANN.org with a specialist recruitment person, some combination, to actually go out and assess the applicants and interview them and come to a series of recommendations of what combination of those applicants might form the best mix for a final panel. Where I do see the community having another role to play in that process, though, is talking about and agreeing what might be a useful series of questions to ask in any interview and making sure that their issues are covered by those questions. But I wouldn't want to see the, whoever the interview panel were limited to those questions, because I think they will be experienced people in the process of interviewing. They need to have the flexibility to be able to burrow down into an area based on the answer that they get to be able to really come to a detailed evaluation of the person. But I think as a starting point, a series of questions that the community has been involved in putting together and agreeing is another touch point that we could have with the SONACs. When it comes to the final slate of candidates, what I see is that we could ask the recruitment team to present to the SONAC representatives a matrix where there are ticks and crosses or various levels of evaluation against this skills matrix, which could be a multidimensional skills matrix of essential and desirable criteria for individuals and aggregate, and come up with a recommendation of what that team believes to be the optimal set of seven jurors to appoint. Now, provided that that is not the only information presented, provided that there is more information about not recommended candidates that it can be looked at, debated, and that the SONACs can come to an informed view themselves about whether that really is the optimal solution or not, I see that that gives them sufficient influence in the process to have confidence in what might then be recommended to the board. Should the board not agree, then I would hope that there could be a collaborative communication between the board and the SONAC representatives to come to a resolution about why the community thinks this, why the board doesn't agree, and move towards a final agreement. So I think the only other point I'd like to touch on is that I think the process we set up needs to be able to continue going forward. I think there's no point setting up an initial process that's going to end in problems further on. So my view would be, let's see what the bylaws permit us initially to do. Do we have to appoint seven people for five-year terms, or can we appoint a few for, say, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and then recruit new panellists? Or if we do have to recruit seven people for 5 years, can we then move to an approach where some will not be renewed, some might be renewed for 2 years, some might be renewed for three, so that we can quickly get into the required stagger of panellists that is best achieved. Then for ongoing recruitments, we have an existing skills matrix for the panel, and as people drop off the panel, we know what skills we need to fill, and we know specifically what we need to go out looking for as we continue on. So I think I'll finish there and give Donna a chance to weigh in with her views. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie. Donna Austin. So a little bit like Julie, I'm the Vice Chair of the GNSO Council, but these are more or less my personal perspectives. And I've come to this in a very different way to Julie. I wasn't involved in the accountability discussions, and I was just filling in on a webinar because Heather couldn't make it. So I've come to this very late, but these are my initial thoughts based on what I heard as a result of that webinar. One of the things that struck me is, and I've had a conversation with Becky Burr about this, this is what we're really doing is setting up the Constitutional Court for ICANN. So this is a pretty serious thing that we're doing. One of the concerns I had is what expertise do we actually have within the community that can help us drive through to the, you know, the process that we're looking to set up. So I agree with a lot of what Julie said in terms of selection criteria and the importance of, you know, drilling down and understanding what that is. But I have concerns that we don't have the expertise within the community to do that. But I think there is value in having the community involved, but I think it has to be augmented by potentially a global recruitment organisation or something that has reputation to be able to, you know, assist in this kind of work. The other thing that concerns me a little bit is that this idea of community, and I think in this regard we need to be careful about how we define the community and what the community involvement is in this. We have a tendency in post transition to put a lot of emphasis on our SOAC leaders to take these efforts forward. I would like to think that what we do is look to the community to see what expertise is out there in for this kind of effort and see if we can draw some of that out. So I think, you know, the selection criteria is important, the setup's important, but I think ensuring that we have the right expertise to be able to do what needs to be done to establish the panel. So I think I agree with a lot of what Julie said, but I think there's an augmentation here if we can have members of the community that are skilled in some way, a professional organisation that can help develop that selection criteria and also the process itself, and then ICANN all because of the expertise that they would bring to it as well. In terms of community expertise, I supported the nominating committee for a period of time, and my experience in that is old, but I tend to think that some of the expertise that the nominating people who have been part of the nominating committee process might actually be able to extrapolate to this effort in some way. And I'm looking at Cheryl as one of the chairs. Not
the eyebrow.
Yeah, not And I'm not talking in expertise in terms of legal expertise or things like that, but in terms of establishing a committee that has actually looked at a selection process, right? So it's not the...
The ICANN flavour.
No, it's not, yeah. It's but potential... If we're looking for expertise within the community, then perhaps that is somewhere we can look. It might be a stretch, Cheryl. I understand that. But, you know, I've been thinking about this in terms of where can we draw the expertise from, and the nominating committee is probably one place we can look. But I'm really conscious that this is a different level of skill set that we need. Yeah. So I'm very conscious of that. I think Sam's going to read a statement from Alan Greenberg, and I'd have to say that I'm pretty much on the same page as Alan in a lot that he said. So I'm not as organised in my thoughts as what Julie is, but I think that the takeaway for me is that this is a really, 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 really important exercise, and it's important that we get the right people to the table to start the process. So I think that's the thing that probably sticks out most for me. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks. So first I'm going to read a statement that was provided by Alan Greenberg, who's the chair of the ALAC, but speaking on his own behalf. And then we'll open it up for questions from people in the audience. And again, if you're listening remotely, I don't know if we have anyone who's on the line. But if you are, you can send an email to ICANN61-202@ICANN.org. And we have a remote participation manager who will be entering those questions into the room. And then if we exhaust questions, I have a couple that I'd like to pose not just to you two but to the room, because we have a lot of really experienced people here, to get some further input. So the statement from Alan says, the new bylaws specify that the ICANN ACs and SOs be involved in the creation of the IRP standing panel in a variety of ways. Section A calls for ICANN to consult with the SO and ACs to initiate a tender process. Section B calls for ICANN to work with SO and ACs to identify and solicit applications. Section C requires that the SOs and ACs nominate a slate of proposed panel members. Section A is fine. Some ACs and SOs may be able to choose and choose to participate. Section B is a bit more problematic in that the implication is that the SO and ACs will take a more prominent role. Section C is very problematic for two reasons. One, there is no established mechanism for the ACs and SOs to work together, even if SO is interpreted to mean the SO councils. No ACs or SOs formally have expertise in the selection of legal experts in international law, corporate governance, judicial systems, alternative dispute resolution, and arbitration. Some individuals might, but that would just be a serendipitous coincidence. So I'm very concerned that we have put in place bylaws that are quite inappropriate, and that needs to be addressed. However, we have a situation where we wish to and need to name a standing panel quickly, despite this issue. We need to find a way to ensure that we are naming a qualified and appropriate panel, despite having this conflict between what the bylaws implicitly presume about the SO and ACs and their real skills and processes. Simply presuming the ACs and SOs will somehow magically develop the right skills and processes is not sufficient. The only way I see forward is for us to have access to independent skills to help name an appropriate panel. That sounds like there may be a requirement for external independent support funded by ICANN organization, but working for the SO and ACs through their appointed representatives. So with that, I'd like to turn to those of you who are here and see if you have any questions, thoughts, or anything you want to put on the record. Christina?
Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry. Obviously, Alan can't answer this question because he's not here, but I would be interested, excuse me, in hearing from both Julie and Donna as to what their respective AC and SO are currently planning to do in terms of, you know, for example, Julie, do you anticipate that the ESSAC is going to endorse your views as the position of ESSAC? Donna, has there been a discussion along similar lines within the GNSO? I think that would be helpful for us to have an understanding of. And I also, I guess the other question that I have is that the one thing that, a couple things struck me during the initial background, Sam, and one of them was, it maybe I misheard, but it sounded as if there had been reference to selecting only 7 panelists, which I read the bylaws to say that it needs to be at least 7. In other words, 7 is the floor, but not necessarily the ceiling. So to the extent that there have been any decisions made along those lines, that would be helpful to know. Thank you.
I'll take that one quickly. This is Sam again, and then I'll turn to Julie and Donna for your first question. You're correct, Christina. So the bylaws do say a minimum of 7. Working through the IRP IoT process, there is an agreement that the initial tranche be 7, so that we had some sort of limit as to where we were starting from. But it does not mean that it will always stay at 7. It will be a minimum of 7, and it can move up from there. And correct me if I'm recalling this incorrectly.
Sam, thanks. It's David McCauley speaking for the record. There have been discussions about that with a view towards getting a panel in place, but not that the number 7 is seen as an absolute, that there need to be 7. There's some desire to get a panel in place as quickly as is reasonably possible while remaining true to the bylaws. But Christina, there would be an... That's not set in stone. Thanks.
Thanks. I must say the ESSAC has not discussed this at all. These are very much my personal views, and the ESSAC being a highly technical group, I suspect that their main focus when we may have a when we will need to have a discussion about this topic within the ESSAC is that the panel be able to deal with issues that have a technical focus. As far as process goes, the ESSAC usually does not want to get too involved with what they see as administrative processes, but certainly the ESSAC leadership will wish to be involved to the extent that we see this as being a robust process for ICANN. I'd just like to make a comment, though, on the at least 7 or is it exactly 7 point. I believe that once we get a series of essential, undesirable and disqualifying criteria in place and see what the individual and aggregate requirements are for the people, that it may be that when we look at the individuals who apply, maybe we can get all of those things with 7 people, but maybe we can't. And it could be that at the end of the recruitment process, we say, hey, to cover this, we actually need to have 9 panellists available. Or, no, we can cover everything we need with 7. So it might be that that's it's premature to try and answer that question just yet, that we leave it until a little bit further in the process to see what we need.
Yeah, Donna Austin. So, Christina, within the GNSO Council, we have not had any discussion about this. Heather and Rafiq and I, as the leadership team, are aware of, you know, the need to do something about this, but we haven't had substantive discussion. We did have some discussion about this in the Registry Stakeholder Group yesterday, but at a pretty much a high level, that this is something we need to pay attention to and be involved in to the extent that we can. But that's the extent of the discussion that I'm aware of. I'm not sure whether other SGs and Cs have had conversations around it.
Thank you.
Cheryl Langdon, off the record, and I'm specifically putting on my hat now as one of the members through the process watching this panel and what we did in the ALAC and with at large to perhaps respond to you, Christina. I'm not trying to answer the question for Alan, but I can give you an insight into what I know has happened. And that is twofold. We also have not had formal discussions. I have not witnessed any formal discussions of the ALAC on this matter at all, but we did have discussions and opinions shared. When I say at all, since we've had the reports put out, right? But during the process, we had very regular, in fact, monthly at one stage, fortnightly and then terribly weekly meetings with the regional leadership and general rank and file members of at large, as well as some of the ALAC, where we went through every single work track, including the IRP, and panel makeup was one of the discussions that was had. So I think the ALAC will be in a reasonable position to discuss this, but it hasn't, as the committee, discussed it. Does that help? Thanks.
David?
Thanks, Sam. David McCauley again, speaking for the record. I wanted to just mention that the idea that's being floated about expertise, third-party help, I think is an interesting idea, and it would be in the interest of this group, I believe, to flesh this out and to try and see what this means. And I would suggest that would be done with an eye towards maintaining the bylaws. I agree with the point that Alan made, that the bylaws are not as comprehensive maybe as we would wish. But now that this process is starting, it would be good to flesh that idea out. And I think the other thing, you made a good point at the beginning, Sam. This is an incredibly important endeavor. And the discussion that Donna referenced that she had with Becky coming up with a constitutional court, this is, in a sense, creating a constitutional convention. And so I would just encourage the leaders of the SOs and the ACs to come together, create a mailing list, do some regular discussions about these things, because the bylaws are what they are, and we have to stick within them. Our work, Robin's here, our work on the IoT is we'll help as best we can. In my role as a leader, I have to remain impartial. I'm happy to do that, but we will help as best we can. And in that respect, I have discussed this with Katrina. I'm active in the CCNSO. Unfortunately, they have a council meeting going on right now, but I believe I will be able to bring Katrina along to these sessions. And so anyway, those are my comments. Thank you.
Heather?
Thanks very much. Heather Forrest, for the record. I want to ask, let's say, a very tangible question, which is how can we do better than what we have here? We need to get more people in the room. We need a process for getting the SOs and ACs involved in this. This isn't necessarily directed at, you know, a concern about conflicts and meeting schedule and that kind of thing, but this is creative thinking. This is clearly something that affects all of us, and we're losing a bit of traction within ICANN on the stuff that matters most to the community, and we're not getting the community in the room. And we can also have a debate, existential, on what the community means and who that is. And I will be the one to go on the record and say that's not the SOAC leaders. So please don't send me and those six people an email after this session saying over to you guys. We need to think about how to get more people in this room. This is not appropriate. I understand that we're all tired and that it's the end of the day, and it's not the case that this wasn't on the schedule, but this needs to be prioritized. And to Donna's point, we haven't yet done it in the GNSO, but I also don't want to see us do this in a silo. Donna and Rafiq and I can take this back to the GNSO and the GNSO Council, and we can have a debate about whether it's a council thing or a GNSO thing, but doing it in a silo isn't appropriate. And so let's think creatively, with your help, Sam, please, about how we get more people in the room and make this a more robust discussion. Thank you.
Christina, and then I want to share some thoughts that I've been having brewing during this.
I completely agree with Heather. I actually was going to go in a different direction in the sense that it seems like there might be I hate this phrase, but some low-hanging fruit that we can take advantage of in terms of, you know, for example, I'm just looking at the list of IRPs that have occurred, you know, in connection with the recent, the 2012 round or whatever we're going to call it. You know, that's 15 IRPs over the course of you know, basically 4.5 years. That's a lot of work. I'd be willing to bet that having a standing panel of only 7 people means that each of those IRPs is going to take twice as long as it currently does. And, you know, I'm not sure that's a trade-off that folks are willing to make. So I guess my question to ICANN.org is, has there been any review, for example, of what the overlap is in terms of the timeline, what the average duration is? You know, has there been any effort to kind of just realizing that it's not a perfect sample, but take a look at the panelists for those IRPs? What, you know, for each of them, what was their background? What was their criteria? What's the commonality? You know, similarly, I know that there's differing views in the community about the satisfaction or lack thereof with the outcome of the formal objections in the new GTLD process. But the fact of the matter is that ICANN had contracts with 3 different providers who in turn have fairly extensive pools of panelists. Is there an opportunity to you know, leverage that? Or, for example, would whatever the agreements that were in place and may still be applicable prevent the SOs and ACs from pursuing that? I realize that this is kind of all disjointed, but it seems to me that there's some kind of core facts and data that we might be able to pull that I don't know if we have.
Thanks. This is Sam Eisner again from ICANN. And listening, you know, I think I fully agree. I think that we need to look at this differently. We need to figure out new ways of engaging. You know, as I've been listening to the panel here, I've been thinking about, you know, do we have, I know if I turn around to people in my technical team and community engagement team, you know, we probably have the ability to put up some moderated forums where we can really kind of put out some specific questions and get more engagement on them. There are a few different things that it sounds like just from the conversation between Alan, Donna and Julie, there are some commonalities, and of course we're not making any decisions in this room, right? But there's some commonalities that we heard. There's a need for external inputs, but you know, are those external inputs on the selection criteria themselves, or is that something that the community feels competent to do? How can we leverage? And Christina, I think it's a fabulous idea, actually, to go through. Let's matrix out who the panelists have been for the IRP proceedings, identify their backgrounds, see what that range of experience has been across the IRPs. And there have been some improvements to the IRP made to anticipate making the proceedings take less time. You know, so I don't know if the time spent over those proceedings will be one-on-one based on the new IRPs, but We have the data about who was there. How can we use that to feed into a skill set discussion with the community? It is a low-hanging fruit. Can we put that question up? Can we put the question of how prepared do you feel as a community, not just the SO and AC leaders, to have the discussion about skill set? Or do you want to identify, such as what Julie was saying, you know, from the ESSAC, there's a likely going to be a statement that we need technical expertise on there from at least one or maybe more of the candidates. Within your SOs and ACs, are there other things that are important? Are there other skills that you think you want to see and identify on that level, even to the extent we might use an external firm to identify, you know, these are the qualifications that you look for in a skilled jurist, right? That's the easy part to get to. It's about the things that are important to the community and making sure that the panel can address and that the community feels that the panel's legitimate in serving the community's needs. So if you're open to us maybe trying to put together some discussion papers on a couple of these topics, finding a place to host these forums online so it's not just dependent on a single webinar, a single session, and pushing out through the SO and AC leaders to tell you, you know, get your community to start looking at this and helping us find other ways to engage, I think we'd be really open to that. Cheryl, then Julie.
Thanks, Sam. Cheryl here. I wanted to come back, and you've led into it, and I like what I'm hearing. I also like the matrix ideas and looking at those, you know, what has already been used and what is desirable. But one thing I'm relatively confident we'll hear in that type of process, Sam, from at least the at-large community and the regional diversity we have, is that they want to ensure, as a criteria, sufficient ability to get regional, geo-regional diversity. So there are going to be some common points that will be identified relatively quickly and relatively easy. And so I think that's a really good way forward.
Yeah, actually, I very much agree with Cheryl on that. One of the things that I had written down that I didn't speak to was that we need to overlay the diversity blanket on top of the matrix. And while I don't think we should substitute diversity for necessary skills, I think it's still an overlay that we need to be cognizant of. But what I was also wanting to say was, is there a little bit of a roadmap that we can look at putting in place over the next few months that may even put us in position to have something a bit more meaty to think about a cross-community session on this topic at ICANN 62.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Heather Forrest. So I think there's a good logic in ICANN.org starting with a discussion paper of some kind, mainly because I think if each of the SOs and ACs were to develop its own independent process, then we'd have a hard time even just coming back to get, you know, we'd all start out in different directions. So I think that's troublesome. But rather than reinvent the wheel, because I think there's a lot of time that could be burned here chasing down rabbit holes, why don't we start with, you know, it's not that we're starting from scratch. We have an existing IRP. If we start with that as a baseline and then say what worked and what didn't work, rather than throw that out completely, I think if we can seize this as a lessons learned opportunity. Otherwise, I feel that any lessons that we may well have learned from the existing process might get lost or ignored. So I would like to see them captured. I also don't want to see, Sam, that you spend your time reinventing a wheel that's already invented. My only concern with Julie, and I'm going to channel Donna here, it's going to be great, mind meld from across the room. My only concern, Julie, about doing this in 62 is 62 is the policy forum, and every time we chip away and we try and add something non-policy into the policy forum, we lose the policy forum. Eventually, we're all going to wake up and go, oh, whoops. So I just want to be careful with that and put that out there.
Good point.
Thanks, Sam. So I have two questions. You know, what's the time frame? What's the budget? But the, you know, just other opportunities where we can have this dialogue. We've got the GDD summit coming up. I really think we should use this as an opportunity with the contractor parties to have a conversation around this. I get this nagging thing in the back of my head about, you know, who are we setting off on this path when we talk about we? So we've got us that are in the room here. We're suggesting that Sam goes off and does some work, but is there a way that we can, and David's got the IoT as well, but is there a way that we can set up an initial kind of oversight committee that is representative of in some way of our community, but then we get into these debates about, you know, we need to have equal numbers and things like that. So that, you know, we waste so much time with that. But I wonder if there's a way that we can think about how can we just set up a...
You want something efficient.
Yes, I do. is there potentially a way that we can do that? Because I think Sam is, to some extent, ICANN.org is going to need that backup and that kind of mechanism. But by the same token, I don't know how long the IoT is supposed to be in place and whether that's as a gap filler that you could potentially do that. I don't know whether that's an option, David or Robin.
Thanks, Donna. David McCauley speaking again. You're grappling with a question that really is fundamentally important right now. How does the community organize itself around this bylaw, especially the standing panel? The IoT does not have a timeline on it, but it does have a certain set of tasks, the rules, then sort of appellate rules, and looking at whether there needs to be further conflict of interest rules, things like that. So there's more work for us to do, but then I think when we're done, we have talked about suggesting to the board that we be disbanded or something like that. I don't know that we can do this under the current bylaws because it's not our role. And so that's my answer. But let me just add one more point of information on the subject of the number of panelists and what the calls on their time will be, and that is from the standing panel, whatever that number is, three panelists will be chosen to hear an IRP. But a losing party will have the opportunity, if they wish, to appeal to the full standing panel. So that's another call on time, potentially. And that's it. Thank you.
So I know we only have 1 minute left. I know. I think that even before a discussion paper, and I appreciate your concerns, Heather, around that, I think we need an action plan to what Julie was saying. I think that's really the first deliverable. Let's get an action plan out that we can circulate and weigh in. What I'd like to propose is one of the first things of that action plan that we can put in place before we even have an action plan written is I think we need to open an email list or a wiki page or something where you can start referring people to join into the conversation to help participate in this. We do have the IRP. We do have the materials that we've presented on this. We already have a web page up, but I think let's move it over to a page where we can actually have some dialogue and some conversation. People can comment on the specific documents. Let's start getting inputs in. We'll get an action plan around the timing, around how things might be able to proceed. We'll flag some of the questions in there. And I think that that's one of the ways that we can start it moving. Even if we're not having a community session, because I hear your concerns, Heather, and at ICANN62, I think we have an opportunity over the next couple months, particularly with things like the GDD Summit, and if there are any other intersessionals for other groups, to really start getting some momentum around this. And hopefully it'll be something tangible that you can share with your communities to say, look, if this is something that you're interested in, go here, start engaging. If you can start identifying people who will commit to do that, I think that would be helpful. If you don't have my email address, I would encourage you it's very easy to do, or just reach out to me and we'll figure out how to, let's get some people on it. So if anyone in this room wants to be on that initial email list, give me your names, let's get it started, because I think even though there are a few people in the room, the good thing I take is we're all very motivated, and we should be. This is a very important thing for ICANN and the community. So I really thank you for your time and the thoughts on this. Does anyone else have anything to say?
So I just want to say that I really like the, you know, voluntary. If you're interested, here's the mailing list. Participate. I think those that will soon work out who's not interested and they'll fall away. So I think that's a good initial start. Good idea, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Just very quickly, Heather Forrest. I agree, in fact, with what Donna's just said. And just to clarify for the avoidance of any doubt, right, slap a disclaimer on it. Very much in the way that Donna has said, you know, I'm not in any way, shape, or form speaking on behalf of council. We've got a number of folks in the room here from the GNSO. I wouldn't like to give any impression that I was speaking on behalf of anyone other than myself. I think that's the spirit with which we've all embraced this session, given the low numbers and so on. And it's been a good opportunity to present some personal views, but let's broaden it and get that involvement. So thanks, Sam.
Can we thank the panelists? Because I reckon it was really quite exciting to hear the matrix ideas and everything else. And Sam, you have a panelist up there too.